The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice fills the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your
settles
soul.
In your soul. Yes, it does. It settles nicely in your soul. Isn't that right, my friend and partner and brother?
Yes, sir.
Ferry Raposo with Wynn Carpenter. Here we are, broadcasting live from KCNR Studios. This is Jefferson State of Mine, M-I-N-E.
Once again.
96.5 FM, where the music sounds better. 1460 AM, where our voices sound better. And you can call in if you wish at 530-605-4567, 530-605-4567, and we are streaming live on KCNR1460.com, KCNR1460.com. And we are streaming live, and we're here with our wonderful producer, Christina. How are you, my dear?
Hello. Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday.
Yes, I'm really happy to be back here with you guys.
Oh,
glad to have you back.
Thank you. Thank you. So it's nice to have a beautiful smiling face as you walk in, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Talking about beautiful smiling faces, we have Laura Hobbs. Dr. Laura Hobbs with us. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for the invitation to join you today.
Oh,
absolutely.
Anytime, my dear. But we want to start something out with, I think you might appreciate this. Well, we know that they're cheating. They know they're cheating. They know that we know that they're cheating. We know that they know that we know that they're cheating, and they still continue to cheat.
And who are the cheaters? I'm just asking for a friend.
No answers here?
No, I'm asking. I'm asking you.
I would say the ROV office. That's what I would say.
Oh.
And I'm not including all the employees, but I think there's a couple of them in there.
Ruh-roh.
That know what's going on.
Ruh-roh.
That's what I think.
That could be really, really bad.
You think?
Yeah, for them.
It could be really bad for them.
It has been bad for us, so now it can flip the tables and it can be bad for them.
Yeah, well, we'll see. You know, we'll just see what we can do here, but we do have a court case going on, don't we, Laura?
That's correct. I'll be given an opportunity to try my case on Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, in 2 days from now, at 10:30 a.m. on the sixth floor in room 64 with Honorable Judge Baker.
Cool. That's great. So you want to bring us up to speed and give us some highlights on the case for people who may not know. I'm sure a lot of people do at this point, but give them a few highlights and what's going on with the case and the reasons for it. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I'll just summarize quickly what Lex Rex wrote. Lex Rex Institute is Alexander Haber Bush's institute. He's representing me in this case. And he says, as far as elections go, this is an incredibly important one. As far as election challenges go, rather. And Shasta's board has been the strongest in the state in pushing for election integrity. And its opponents, including well-funded extremist organizations such as the Southern Poverty Law Center, have tried everything from passing bills to recalling members to stop them. And Laura's seat is in the swing vote. She's demonstrated a commitment to serve and to create secure elections. So if we lose this battle, the election integrity in California may be gone forever. He feels like a lot rests on this battle. I tend to agree. For me, it's personal, but it's also the bigger issue of election integrity here, not just in Shasta County, but in the state and nationwide as well.
What are some of the violations that actually have happened in this office? And some I know have been directed maybe at the ROV herself and her assistant. So maybe you can expound on that if you can.
Okay. Well, there's numerous violations of maladministration in the election, such as not following the state memorandum for a randomized alphabet drawing, which would have given me an advantage over, at least would have gotten me to the runoff mark to be able to compete in November against Alan Long. This vote, this contest was decided by 14 votes. So it's a very, very small margin that we're talking about here. And the law, the suit that we brought forth alleges that, amongst other violations, such as the fact that observers weren't given access to observe with their eyes, with their ears, to see what was actually going on, to know based on their own observations that everything was conducted fairly and accurately. The way the elections are run, it's basically behind closed doors. You can peer in through windows or watch through a monitor, but you have no direct access. And that's a problem, because when you get far away from what's actually happening, you have no meaningful observation. You can't see the ballots or the markings thereon. You can't see whether or not they're actually counting them correctly, because you're kept at such a distance. You know, they started this with the COVID. They wanted to keep all the election observers 6 feet away for COVID, and they've transitioned. They kind of took that and ran with it, and now they're wanting everyone to stay over 6 feet away for, quote unquote, the safety of their employees.
Is this something that is mandated or law that they're staying with it? I mean, does it have anything to do with an emergency order or anything?
No, but the legislator is working overtime to write this into law, to codify the cheat and to codify the lack of observation by the public, so that we are losing the ability to actually audit these elections. And that brings me to another point, is that a lot of the auditing documents that are created in an election, such as the audit log file from the Hart InterCivic machine, the cast vote record file from the Hart InterCivic machine, and the manual ballot logs, were kept hidden from the public. I requested on, I believe it was March 29th, a day after the election was certified, for these records. So the election's over, it's been certified, why not release these records, right? But no, it wasn't until 2 months later that, and with the, you know, the looming legal case, they finally released these records to me. I don't know that I would have these records to this day if there wasn't a lawsuit pending.
Wow.
And that's a key component of transparency in elections, is the ability to see the records and whether everything was conducted properly and to be able to audit it.
Right.
Well, Lex Rex does great work, and Alex Haber-Busch is amazing. And I'm really excited about the attention that your case is getting. Everybody's tired of corruption, but as I spoke at the very beginning of the program, the position of these people knowing that we know, and they know we know, and they still do it. And to me, I don't know where this is going to end as far as us putting our foot down, but I can't believe there can't be some, and maybe you can help answer this, who can get in there and say, wait a second, you have to let these people have better access, they have to be able to see what's going on, and stop it in midstream and be in there to do that. Who has the jurisdiction to do that?
Well, actually, you cannot stop it in midstream. There are laws already stating that you're not allowed to interfere with the election process.
Okay.
And the only way to put your foot down, so to speak, is to bring them to court and to say, look, these laws were violated. And the ROV themselves, when we tried to challenge a ballot back in November, they told us specifically, you're not allowed to challenge any ballots and any signatures. You're just not allowed to.
So this is the remedy, is the court.
Yeah, that's the only
remedy.
This
is the remedy. Okay.
This is the only
remedy
we have.
Well, that's really scary when it comes to the court, whether it's a jury, so you have 12 of your peers helping to adjudicate that, but then the judge, depending on their personal beliefs, that can decide all of this.
Yes.
And that is scary. It essentially comes down to one person.
Mm-hmm. And the judges, unfortunately, all across the country have not been inclined to take up cases such as mine. They'd rather decide on a technicality and throw it out based on standing or something of that sort than actually hear the evidence.
Wow.
Well, we have got a caller on the line. Kim, what say you?
Good morning, Terry. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for what you're doing for our community. I'm calling because I've been witness to the board meetings. I've been an observer during the count of the elections, and then I've also attended the hearing, the last hearing, and my stomach is in knots. I'm really nervous. We keep seeing all this lawfare happening all over the country, and a case like Laura's, you know, when you're somebody who's actually seen it. So when in the last hearing, the judge mentioned that he was nervous about continuing with the hearing because he didn't want voters to become apprehensive about the election system. And it's exactly that. It's not allowing due process. It's what we saw Joanna do in front of the Board of Supervisors. The denial of due process, the destroying of evidence, and then the gross and inhumane way we were treated as we were trying to observe the count. We were treated worse than prisoners.
Wow.
The first stage, you couldn't even, weren't allowed to use the bathroom. There
really?
Was this wrought iron fence that had been installed that made the ROV like a hostile jail. And then when I needed to use the restroom, I had to be escorted up the elevator with one of those employees. And when we came out of the elevator, like, she wanted to escort me all the way to the bathroom door. But before we even got close to the bathroom door, there was an open door with a room where they had machines and were doing counting and all these trays of the ballots. And she made sure to slam that door so that I mean, she didn't close it gently. She shoved it in a rush.
Who was she?
And pardon me?
Who was she? Was there anybody that you could identify that was having that behavior?
If I saw her, I could identify her.
Okay.
Again, but she was an ROV employee.
Okay.
Who was, you know, assigned to escort me to the bathroom. And then the other thing I noticed was that there were efficiency problems. So between each tray of ballots that they would bring down to count, then when they were finished, they would take those trays back upstairs, but there were times that they brought down trays that only had 12 or 20 ballots, and they would go through this entire process, and it would take 15 to 20 minutes once they would leave the area, sometimes longer than 20 minutes, till they would come back with the next tray and begin counting again. And the other thing that was absolutely unnerving was that if you saw a ballot get placed in the wrong box, or if you saw them count it as one while they were putting two ballots in the box, and you tried to raise your hand to say something just went wrong there, no. You know, and then they would continue. If Joanna would come over and she'd want to take us all the way to the far end of the room, as far as she could get us away from where the counting was. And so you couldn't, if you wanted to continue to observe and document what you were seeing as the counting was occurring, you had to wait till that break and then raise your hand. And it was hostile because there was a man who came. We weren't allowed to speak. Our voices were not allowed to be heard. We had to whisper and we had to cover our mouths while we whispered.
Yeah, I saw that, all of those things too, Kim. You're absolutely correct. And I witnessed part of what they did when you were mentioning them taking the ballots upstairs and then bringing them back. That's how they insisted it be done during the recount, and that's part of the reason why I didn't go through with that recount, is because the system was very inefficient and it was also not very transparent, because here these batches are going up and then disappearing for 20 minutes and then coming back down. Why not just sequester all of the ballots for one district in one spot so everyone can see them in plain sight? Instead, they insisted on this whole ballot library system or batch library where you would go check out a batch and then return it. And if the counts didn't match the computer, they would send it back upstairs and then send it back downstairs and then count it again over and over until it matched the computer. Well, sometimes the computer makes mistakes. So the whole premise that it has to match the computer is incorrect as well.
It sounds very inefficient as far as how they manhandle and physically as they process this. Sounds like their system is totally broken. And you were asking earlier what could be done to fix this. A forensic audit.
It always goes back.
It doesn't matter the department. It doesn't matter what they do. It doesn't matter their process. A forensic audit 100% will fix this stuff. It'll point out the flaws. It'll point out where everything goes. And what stands behind the forensic audit? Law. Prosecutorial law stands behind a forensic audit. So if anything is found to be wrong in there and they can deep dive into it, they can figure that out, and guess what? It can go to court.
So what is the what's it looking like as far as in court now, and what seems to be the major thrust of where we need to be?
Well, the defense is trying very hard to dismiss this case. And before we go on much further, Kim, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you, Kim. Appreciate it.
Thank you for being there to observe everything that you witnessed. I think she's offline.
Yeah.
So the problem is the defense wants to have this case dismissed. According to this type of contest, it's a very specific type of law. It's not your typical contest. Or your typical lawsuit, rather. It's not something that can be just summarily dismissed. So they have to argue for why that should happen. They wanted to have it dismissed at the last hearing, and the judge seemed to be inclined to go that direction until Alexander Haberbusch pointed out the law that you can't just dismiss this without a hearing. It's a contest that must be heard by the judge, and also his reasons for dismissing were not valid, because part of what he was arguing was that it wasn't in proper procedural format. So this had to do with the fact that when I filed the case, I did not have a lawyer, so it was written by a non-lawyer, and it was lacking the finesse that a suit would have if it was written by. Didn't have the legalese, basically.
Well, how is the John Q. public supposed to do this unless they, go through the process like you did and you find out, maybe I made some unintentional errors here or didn't do it the proper way? It's the court's responsibility to tell you, you should have a step by step on what you need to do. Did they not give you a packet of step by step of what to do and what the processes were and the procedures?
No, not at all.
Of course, they do it by design, so that you would fail, so that they can kick it out.
Yeah.
If they want it a certain way, they need to tell you what the rules are. They need to tell you what the processes are, and they need to essentially hold your hand through the process because you are not an attorney.
Well, this type of case is so unique that actually very few attorneys even understand it. And that's why I had to hire at great expense an election attorney who knows the details and the ins and outs of this type of law. It's very likely that the judge hearing this case has never heard a similar case.
So he's the inexperienced one when it comes to the case.
Wow.
All of us, yeah, except for, I think, Alexander Haberbusch. So the judge did order that that we refine it, and so I responded. He ordered this on May 2nd. I was waiting. According to the law, it says the judge shall set the hearing date. So I was calling the courthouse every day, practically, to say, hey, do we have a court case yet? When's the court?
Right.
When's it set?
Because you don't want to miss that.
Because I don't want to miss it. I don't know what I'm doing. And so they explained to me, no, the judge is just looking to find room on his calendar. So I waited and waited. And then on May 2nd, he sent out a court order saying that I had to refine the grounds for contest and that to resubmit that to the court. So I did that. I responded by hiring Alexander. He sent out a second amended contest writ mandamus, and that was filed on May 17th. So basically, we're trying to get everything in order. It's a very strong case, and there's not just a maladministration. There's actually tabulation errors that took place. We looked at the ballot tracks data, which is the data that it's kind of like a voter roll because it tells you the voter, their address, their phone number, when they submitted their ballot and how they submitted it by mail, drop box, in person. And it tells you whether the ballot was accepted or challenged or undeliverable. So you can use that to get a count for how many ballots were submitted. And those counts do not match the official count, the official tally that was published on March 28th.
So is that count higher or lower than the official count?
It's lower. So what that means is they have more votes than voters.
Ruh-roh.
So this is a big issue, and in District 2 in particular, there's about 160-some votes that have no voters attached to them. So it there's a lot of problems. That's just some of the problems. But the big issue, too, is to audit this type of election, you have to have the audit log files and the cast vote record data. And what they're now doing in Sacramento is they're trying to write laws saying that the cast vote record data is actually considered a paper ballot, which is not true. It's an electronic document. But paper ballots, as we know, have to be sealed away and can only be opened in the case of a court challenge or, basically only in the case of a court challenge or a recount. That's the other case. So they want to hide these documents away from the public, even the electronic documents. And that's gets back to what Kim Moore was saying as well about Joanna Francesca destroying evidence, destroying documents that actually belong to the public. The public owns them, and the public has a right to see these documents.
Wow.
And did anybody raise this up to Joanna? Did anybody say, hey, don't do that? And whose responsibility would that have been? Could the Board of Supervisors have done that?
I believe they could have. And I think that what has been happening time and time again with the ROV's office is they use the gray area of law against us, against transparency, against truth and full disclosure. Where she could have used that gray area of law to actually provide to keep and retain that evidence, but she made the wrong choice, in my opinion.
Is there any role, I guess, that, and maybe let me know if I'm getting off track here, but is there any role that the Board of Supervisors at this point can play in that? And if that answer's a little bit longer, we'll just go to our break now. Is there a role that you can think of or that you want to talk about that they could take? And maybe we should take the break first and come back to that question.
Yeah, let's do that. I have a lot of ideas.
Okay, great. Okay, great to hear.
Thanks.
All right, everybody, well, time has come.
For 51.
So let's get it done.
Amen.
Amen.
Sing it with me one time now. Jefferson, stay, number 51. We believe in freedom, believe in God and guns. We believe in working hard till the working day is done. Teach the children to follow their heart, teach them right from wrong. One day this will be their land, and this will be their song.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history.
Thank you, Redding Rancheria, for supporting Tree of Life International Charter School. Gracias por todo su apoyo.
Thank you, Redding Rancheria!
The Shasta Lake Chamber of Commerce wants to thank the Redding Rancheria. They have sponsored our Friday night in the park for more than 18 years, and we really appreciate it.
Redding Rancheria. Proud to play our part.
Wind River Resort and Casino is hosting a Father's Day weekend to remember. Our annual Bacon and Brew Fest will kick off the weekend Friday, June 14th. Enjoy live music and tasty treats from a variety of local restaurants and breweries.
For only $25 plus fees.
Keep the fun going and join us Saturday, June 15th for Micro Wrestling. Tickets start at just $15 plus fees. Don't miss this action-packed weekend. For tickets or complete details, visit windriver.com or call 1-800-280-YOU-WIN. And find your moment at Wind River Resort and Casino.
As we all get older, the one constant thing is the aggressive, excessive mail and advertising for Medicare, Medicare supplements, and Medicare Advantage. And almost every one of them is a call center with no idea of what you really need. Siskiyou Insurance has an agent that deals with nothing but Medicare issues and can explain the differences clearly between a Medicare supplement and Medicare Advantage. Call Greg Green at Siskiyou Insurance at 530-224-2345 or 1-800-773-2345.
I'm Tracy Edwards, CEO of the Redding Rancheria. Giving back to our local community is a tradition that is firmly rooted in our history. It is with great honor and pride that we have been able to support several amazing local businesses like these over the years.
Thanks to the Redding Rancheria for their support of the Kiwanis Dust Dam Club Food for Kids program. We send 185 bags of food home every Friday. They're instrumental in helping us.
Redding Rancheria, proud to play our part.
Songs for Laura. I won't back down.
True. No way out.
Well, before we left for the break, folks, we were talking about maybe some things where there is some ideas and some jurisdiction the Board of Supervisors might hold in this whole conglomerated mess.
They hold the purse strings.
Yeah, that's one thing, ain't it? Anyway, yeah. My dear, enlighten us on what you're thinking here.
Well, California Elections Code 15270 et seq, which means that whole section, is all based on hand counting. And these are the procedures established by law, used by all 58 counties before the introduction of electronic voting systems. So those are still in the law and available to use. The Board of Supervisors themselves have the authority, and this is written in Election Code 19207, that the County Governing Board may adopt any kind of voting system or combination of systems, and AB 969 usurps that authority. It also, within the California Government Code 25201, says that the Board of Supervisors may canvass all election returns pursuant to this law. And the word canvass means to count or to tally.
Right, that's
That's defined by Elections Code 335.5.
Okay,
Not just the counting, but it's the public process of counting.
Well,
public is the key phrase right
now. I want to back you up. I'm not rushing you at all. I want you to go through all
that's
that.
Okay.
But I want to back you up just so we get clarity. The first code you were talking about is still in effect.
Yes.
And when it talks about the county government, that is the Board of Supervisors.
Yeah,
of course.
The executive and legislative
and so,
body of the county.
Can you read that part again, and then I want to ask you a question. Go ahead.
Okay. Election Code 19207 grants authority to the County Governing Board to adopt any kind of voting system or combination of voting systems.
Okay. Stop the tape. So if that's the case, then how is AB 969 legal unless it just changed that law? Unless it was AB 969 an amendment to that law, or was it canceling out that law?
Neither, actually.
Okay, then how can it be legal?
That's a good point. So there's a lot of aspects to AB 969 that are definitely contestable. The fact that it was passed with a false urgency clause is definitely contestable. The fact that they said it did not have any fiscal impact is definitely contestable, because if you're forcing people to use election machines, there are costs associated. and ironically, they used Kathy Allen's bloated estimate of how much hand counting would cost our county. She was talking about, 1.3 to 2 and 3 million. The number just kept going up.
Right.
And the Appropriations Committee in Sacramento actually took her word as evidence for how much hand counting was going to cost. And therefore, machines would be no more expensive than hand counting. So they said, no, this isn't going to affect the counties fiscally, so we can mandate them to do this, which is false.
Well, maybe they found themselves into a pickle there by taking those numbers that she said, and then they ran with it. Now they're finding out, uh-oh, we're in trouble.
Yeah, so there's a lot of basis for a legal contest. That's something that the board could initiate.
Would this be would this be considered unconstitutional?
Absolutely.
Okay. Go ahead.
I have another one to read to you for that. The California Constitution, Article 2, Section 1, states that all political power is inherent in the people. The government is instituted for their protection, security, benefit, and they have the right to alter and reform when the public good may require.
Okay. Solution. A resolution by the Board of Supervisors of Shasta County stating that they will no longer enforce or expect anything enforced that is not constitutional, according to the United States Constitution first, the California Constitution second, then a measure on a ballot, and the measure needs to say, the county of Shasta shall not, will not, abide by or submit to any laws that are unconstitutional, which cancels out AB 969. So they have to stand up and say, hey, basically give them the middle finger. I mean, that's basically what I think needs to be done. You put that measure on the ballot and let the people vote on it. You've covered both aspects. You've covered the legislative and the executive part of this.
Exactly.
And they need to cover both of those, and these two things do that. So, guys, Kevin, Chris.
And they can even write that into our charter as well.
Yeah.
As a charter county.
We
can put that on the ballot for people to
vote in. Let's get it on the ballot. In fact, Janet Chandler's writing it right now. Put you on the spot, Janet. I know you're listening. We have Stones on the line. Stones, what say you?
Good morning. If anybody needs to borrow any political middle fingers, I've got a whole box of them. I had to buy them in bulk because I use them so often. I wear them out. Hey, so I have a list against Joanna Franciscat. I think that's how you say her name. Who cares?
Can you speak up a little bit, Rich? We're having a bit of a hard time hearing you, brother. Can you speak up a little? I know this is going to be good. Go ahead.
How about now?
Yeah.
Much better. Now? Thank you, sir.
So I have a list as to why we should not appoint Joanna Franciscat to the registrar. During multiple elections, and this last one she was in charge of, Kathy Allen was maybe hiding in her house. I don't know where she was at, but Joanna continued to violate a law regarding observers observing the ballot and the signatures thereon. Joanna did not publicly notice the 1% manual tally precinct selection. That public notice was never put out. In my humble opinion, that 1% tally is invalid because the public notice did not occur, and the 1% tally is part of the total certification of the entire election. So if the 1% tally is void, then I submit that the entire election certification is void. Next thing she did a couple of times where they did vote by mail processing with less than 48 hours legal notice. Less than 48 hours. Two times Joanna allowed that to happen, March 5th. And then she does a 1% quote-unquote manual tally recount of the Kevin Cry ballot. So, and the reason, of course, is so that the Recall Cry folks did not have to pay for it. And then she says, well, I couldn't finish the 1% on Laura, so now Laura has to pay. And then she also did, the randomized alphabet. You know all about that already. Also, after the deadline for ballots being received, I personally viewed one employee, bringing in ballots from the mail, the post office, about 11:30 every day is when they did their mail run at the downtown post office. And one employee was bringing in ballots, processing those ballots in the back of the room. This happened to be the same day as the 1% tally. And that single employee was processing them and stamping them, probably voiding them, likely, because it was after the 7-day mail-in deadline. That does not matter. It was still a live ballot. It was still a raw ballot, and they violated the rule of two there. And I saw that personally. And then Laura mentioned the audit logs and the records. Why were those records held for over 2 months beyond the certification date? That is extremely concerning. And then I think I got one more here. The last one was, of course, the first day of the 1% tally, where the lobby of the elections office was set up to where the observers were basically up against the wall of the entrance door, and everything else was happening anywhere from 15 to 45 feet away where they could not see anything. And those are the major points that I have why Joanna Francisca should not be the next registrar of voters. She cannot be trusted. She, every gray area, discretionary area that they had, Laura already said it, they chose against fairness and transparency. Anyway, that's all I have today, unless you have any questions.
Richard, you're a good man. Thank you for what you do, and I'm glad you're pissed off.
Motivates the work.
Yeah, and I'm glad you got that box of middle fingers, because we're probably going to have to borrow them. So with that, my good friend, thanks again.
Thank you, Rich.
And we have Dominic on the line. Dominic, how are you, sir?
Dominic,
are you there?
Yes, I am. How are you guys doing?
And we're doing good. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. Hey, Laura, you are one brave person. The Shasta County Republican Assembly and all folks that are interested in election integrity, thank you so much for what you're doing. And, you know, win or lose, and I certainly hope that the judge is brave enough to give you a shot at the election in November. But this stuff, election integrity and the fight for free and fair elections, is not going away.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the country, you see it in the world. If you read the publications that come out, and the right publications that I don't think are the left side of the aisle really tunes into them, election integrity and it's just not going away. This fight will continue until we get transparency and free and fair elections. And you're one piece of that, Laura. And I applaud you for what you're doing.
Amen.
Thank you, Dominic. Amen.
Thank you, Dominic.
So what we need then, Dominic, is we need to have a resolution by the Board of Supervisors and a measure to go on the ballot and a forensic audit. And they can't screw around with it anymore. They've got to get it done. That's very simple as far as the measure goes. Who is not going to vote for adherence to the Constitution of the United States and the state of California, which will null and void AB 969? I mean, enough is enough. Let's grow a pair and get it going.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, and that goes back to, what's going to be happening on the open interviews that are going to be June 18th and 19th for the ROV. They're going to do that at the board meeting. And the regular board meeting has been bumped up to Monday, the 17th, to accommodate the interviews. So they're, 3 days in a row, they're going to be sitting in that room going over all this stuff. So just, have yourself be present. The 17th is the board meeting, 9 o'clock usual start time, and then they're going to start the interviews on the 18th, and I'm assuming they'll probably start around 9 o'clock, and they're going to do open live interviews of all candidates that have submitted applications that they deem worthy to interview, and they're going to be interviewed live right there in the board chambers on the 18th and the 19th. So just so everybody knows.
Yeah, and some of the candidates they have for that are very good, very well suited for the position. There's Clint Curtis is one of them.
Really?
Yep. Clint Curtis will be here.
Our friend.
And he's got a lot of experience fighting for hand-counted elections. He's been in this field for over 20 years.
Yep.
And there's some other very good contenders, Michael Gableman is one of them as well. He's from Wisconsin, and he's got a lot of experience in election integrity. So those would be two very good candidates. And I'm looking forward to seeing the others they've selected as well.
Yeah, that's pretty fun.
That's
great.
When
you stop and think about Clinton, who is a hardcore liberal,
but
when it comes to voter integrity, he's all over it. A lot of fun. We had a conversation. He was saying that he thinks he can convince Gavin Newsom. So, Clint,
good luck.
You're listening, buddy. Sick him. Go get him, man.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Laura, I want to get back to you here and get you back on where you were going on this track of the grievances you have. Go right ahead.
So, and the other option for the Board of Supervisors is to just go ahead and get it done. Write a local ordinance saying that here in Shasta County, we must hand count all elections. We can you do the machine count afterwards, but first and foremost, we must hand count them. And part of the problem, too, with the accounting system of the selections is that they don't have an accounting system. They don't have chain of custody after the ballots have been removed from the envelope. They don't have a list of the number of batches and the number of ballots in each batch before they send it through the computer. They use the computer to tell them the list of the batches. They don't create their own prior to sending it through the computer. And that's one of the things that the state was going to mandate prior to AB 969 passing. They were going to mandate that if we did a manual tally, we had to serialize every single ballot, create a serial record.
I remember that.
But yet, if we're sending it through the machine, that's not necessary,
no.
According to them. They're just going to trust the machine to tell them exactly what went through it. And so there's problems there. And the county board, they don't need to ask permission. They already have the authority granted to them.
Why aren't they granted? Why is everybody dragging their feet?
I think it's a political hot potato. They don't want to touch it. And I think it's
unfortunate. It's not all of them, though. It's only one or two.
Well, Patrick Jones is willing and ready.
Oh, yeah.
He's all over it.
He's all over it.
The others, not so much. So we...
Why is that, I wonder? I mean, maybe...
What are they scared of?
Well, yeah. I mean, what do you have to lose?
Well,
I mean,
as I understand it, they're afraid of the state retaliating against them, which I'm sure they will.
How?
Who cares?
Bringing out the big guns against them.
Who cares?
How?
They have the executive
doing
money.
What?
Taking
power.
Us to court. But I think it's okay. I say bring it on.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, and I know that, Patrick is a patriot. He stands. Chris, I just haven't talked to him, so I don't know. Kevin, hopefully, I mean, I'm surprised that he wants the transparency he wants. I'm surprised he hasn't been all over this. I'm surprised he hasn't even been about talking about a measure or a resolution or the fact that we're just going to an ordinance, and that's Article 11 in the California Constitution. We can do an ordinance to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just don't know what the dragging of the feet is and all this other stuff we're doing. By the way, and this isn't really off subject because you talked about how we could do some defunding with the ROV office. I wasn't totally at the budget meeting, and I've heard different things. And I've texted a couple supervisors to get an answer. Haven't got one yet. Did we decrease the budget or increase the budget for the county?
It's increased.
That I did hear from one supervisor. By about $30 million, something like that?
It's at $700 million versus the $650 that it was before.
So $50 million.
Well, I don't know what the total dollar amount was.
Well, approximately.
But that's what it was.
Come on, you guys.
Yeah, that's a big disappointment. I'd like to see it done differently. I think... just going before the board in these 3 days is not enough. I think they need to sit down and have some sessions beforehand, reducing everything one-on-one, and then when it's finalized, bring it before the board.
I think the thing that we have to say here, and you said it, Laura, and maybe just expound on the thought, what the hell do they have to lose? We are losing our country. We have immigration. We have 4,600 new prisoners being released. We have crime that's rampant. Everything that was a crime is not a crime. We have all this stuff going on in our country. We're losing our liberty, losing our freedom. They're going after our kids in the schools. Everything else, what in the hell do you have to lose?
Nothing.
I'm trying to figure it out. I mean, there might be something.
And
that
we're about
we don't to
lose their board majority as well, potentially come January of next year. So
right now
is the time to act.
Exactly.
You know, strike while the iron is
hot.
Pull
the Band-Aid off and get it done.
Yep.
Just do it.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph. How are you, sir? What say you?
Well, I apologize. I've missed most of the show, so you may have already addressed this. But, you know, it just seems to me that this trial that's coming up next week, that the judge, trying to say this in a diplomatic way, but he's trying to do everything he can to dismiss the case. And I don't want Laura to address this because, you know, I don't want the judge to hear her say something about him. But, you know, either one or Terry, can you tell me, you know, to explain what happened with this nearly impossible court order that was given out this last week and how it looks like he's trying to get rid of this thing by even tricks if necessary?
Well, I think a lot of times when you're in court, it's difficult to critique the judge at this point. I mean, it's not that I don't want Laura to answer. She can, certainly she wants to, but I don't, you know, being in court and being in several court cases, we know what it's like to win an eye about when you start going after the judge. Now, I can go after the judge.
Yes,
and
you
can go after
right.
the judge.
Well, right. I can speak to this. It could have been a clerical error, but on the 4th, June the 4th, they sent in an order that we give our cause to not dismiss the case. I can't remember the technical term, but that we provide briefings for why the case should not be dismissed and that it be provided to the court within five court days before the hearing, which the hearing was set already for the 11th. So,
you got it on
it takes
fourth,
two days to mail it to the attorney. If we hadn't gotten wind of it, we wouldn't have known about it basically until today or tomorrow.
How did you get wind of it?
Well, I probably shouldn't disclose my sources,
oh, okay.
but I did find out that the judge ordered that.
So then it was going to be, you were going to be set up for failure.
Yeah, it could have been a clerical error.
That could have been a clerical error.
Oh my gosh! Why did?
Well, justice delayed is justice denied, right?
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
So, and I think that might have been if there was a intent behind it, would have been so that we would have no other choice but to say we need a continuance because we didn't have a chance to fulfill this order.
Wow!
But luckily, we saw it in time, submitted it the very next day, within 24 hours of having. Receive that, or at less, probably within 12 hours. So.
Wow. So, Joseph, do you have anything else, buddy?
Well, yeah, it just seems like this judge, I understand he's one of the most fair judges in the county, but in my opinion, that's setting the bar really low. And that he's doing everything he can. He keeps saying, well, this case, you know, it languished. Well, excuse me, but there was a time period for her to be able to file the case, and she filed it as soon as she could. And then, well, again, I'll try to use a polite term, but Mr. Long...
You don't have to be too polite.
he was dodging service.
Yeah.
Now, for the judge to say that this language, you didn't make an attempt, well, the sheriff's office was the one that was trying to serve him, and they gave up. Hello, that's not Laura's fault, you know.
Nope.
So she had to find ways to be able to track this bozo down, and was able to finally get him while he's picking up his kid at school. Now that's, you know, and then he keeps wanting to toss it out because you didn't do anything. It smells to me. I'm sorry. It just really smells.
You know, Joseph, I'm really glad that it's too bad you have a hard time speaking what's on your mind. I love you, man. Thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you, Joseph.
Thank you, Joseph. We have another caller. Bruce is on the line. What say you, Bruce? Bruce, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, Bruce.
How are you, buddy? What's up?
I'm doing great, and I just Laura does an amazing job, mm-hmm. and she certainly needs some financial support, so hopefully everybody can chip in. I had a question for her on the thing that's coming up on Tuesday. Is Mr. Haberbusch successful on getting subpoenas out to several of the, you know, the ROV office, et cetera?
Yes, he was successful in that.
How many people are going to testify, do you know? Or
Well, aside from Joanna, we have three high-level election workers, the management level,
okay.
that will be there.
Okay, great. And you didn't mention Bob Holsinger. Is he still a candidate, or is...
He's withdrawn his application.
Okay.
Oh, he has. Interesting. Okay. Well, that's too bad. He's a good man.
Yep.
He would have been very well qualified.
Really
I think...
Good.
There's whoever gets this position is going to be under the crosshairs, under fire, no matter what they do. And I can understand the trepidation there about not wanting to.
It's a high-focus job. You're going to get hammered by these people. And it takes a tough nut like Trump to handle stuff like this. And like Terry's saying, what has the board got to lose? If the way the state keeps operating, they're going to come arrest all conservatives eventually. They want us... to shut up, and so the time is of the essence to fight back. We can do it, peacefully.
Mm-hmm. Well, we got about 18 weeks till election, so we better do it or get off the pot.
That's right.
Absolutely. What do you got to lose?
That's
I
right.
I pray that the supervisors are listening and they'll get the spine to do something.
Surprised. Mm-hmm. A couple of them.
Thank you, Laura.
Okay. Welcome. Thank you, Bruce. Appreciate it.
So, Laura, we've got about 5 minutes here. Go ahead.
And tell how they can help financially, too.
Yes, that's absolutely right. So this is a very expensive case to litigate, to have a special an election specialist. I'm not a wealthy individual. This has all been grassroots funded. So every penny that I get at this point goes to pay the the lawyer. So we are in need of funds. You can donate on my website, which is votelaurahobbs.com. And my name is spelled LauraHobbs. And that's votelaurahobbs.com. There's donation links. You can also vote directly fund this through going to the LexRex website as well. And anything that you give them will be applied directly towards my lawsuit.
Oh, nice. That's good to know.
Perfect.
And that's easy to find, folks. LexRex and easy to find search engine that'll pop right up for you.
Mm-hmm. And as far as the upcoming election, I wanted to encourage people to use a precinct ballot and leave their envelope at home. And why I'm saying this is because it enables you to get results quicker. The precinct ballots will be counted that night, and that's by law. They have to count those the same night, and they have to count without ceasing, so they'll continue to count until all those precinct ballots are counted. Whereas the ones that are sent in by mail or dropped off in an envelope, those will not be counted right away. It may be a couple of weeks until they're counted. There's a potential for them to be challenged. They have to undergo signature verification, and then they have to be removed from the envelope, which, again, takes time and manpower. So I'm encouraging people to vote a naked ballot, go to the precinct, just fill it out there and submit it at the precinct without the envelope. And the other reason is that we need to maintain the ceremonial aspect of voting. This is how
That's
we pass it on generation to generation.
Right.
And we need this to be done on one day and the results on the next day. We need to have the results sooner. We can't and the last reason as well, sorry, just to hammer this down, is the chain of custody, because when you have a ballot that is sitting around the elections office for weeks on end without chain of custody, it's a problem.
That is a problem.
Do you want to explain why it is? Go ahead and explain. Got a couple of minutes here.
So why the chain of custody is a problem?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what happens is that as soon as they finally remove the ballot from the envelope, it sits in a room on an open air rack, and there's no counting. There's no secured box. There's no double signatures, time, date, and the count of the number of ballots. None of that occurs. It just sits there on the shelf like any other document. But these should be, we should have a firm accounting of how many ballots are in hand, where they are at every time and every moment within the elections office.
Right.
And we don't have that the way it stands right now.
Very good.
All right.
So we have 2 minutes left. You want to give people another way to help her? And come on, guys. I mean, with this person be a great supervisor or what?
There you go.
I mean, seriously, come on. I mean, there's probably no one in the county that is more up to date and astute on how things are working in the county, bar some of the people we have on the board. Of course, the action has to be taken, guys.
Yep.
Guys, action has to be taken, guys. Laura, have about a minute left. Take us home.
Well, I would like to thank all of you guys. I think this is not just about having one good supervisor or a board majority. It has to do with the individuals. We, the people, we have the power. We need to make this happen. So it's not going to be just me or just this case or just the board of supervisors passing ordinance. We have to all get behind this and stand up and do something. Do anything you can within your power to help this cause.
That's right. Amen.
Well, guys, let's see. Forensic audit, measure.
Yep.
Ordinance.
Yep.
Resolution. Oh, my. There's four, but that's okay. We just made it up.
There you go.
Let's go, guys. Come on, board.
Make
get
it
something
happen.
Going here. Yep. Come on. Come on, guys. Let's do the right thing. talking about doing the right thing. Time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
Amen.
Brought to you on KCNR Shasta Redding by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.